Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of February 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, Gary Schnitke will join us. He's updated his crop budgets for the state of Illinois, and they kind of look like the rest of the Midwest. He'll tell you what the difference is between planting soybeans, corn, and other crop rotations, and which acreage mix he thinks could be in the offing this spring. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with the guys at Risk Pulse in Chicago. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago for this Monday afternoon, March corn finished 4¾ cents lower at $3.70 and a half. The May at 3.80 down 4½, and July down 4¼. Settlement price there at $3.88 and a quarter. December 3.98 and a half down 3¼ cents. And next year's March corn at $4.08 and a half down 3¼. March soybeans up $0.01½ at $9.11 and three quarters, though that's off the high of 9.21. May at 9.25 up 1¼. July up 1¼ at 9.38 and a half, and November soybeans at 9.55 and a half higher. The January futures at 9.64 and a half up 1 cent. The bean oil down 15 cents at $30.36. The bean meal at 305.40, that's down 20. Soft red winter wheat March contract 20 lower. This was the leader in the marketplace for the day. March at 4.66 and three quarters. The May at 4.72 and three quarters, down 19. And July soft red down 17 and a quarter. At $4.77 and three quarters. The hard red July finished at $4.59 and a half, down 14 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures were down at 12 and a half cents, and the lead February at 128.55, the April at 129.22 and a half, up 35 cents. March feeder cattle at 142.50, down 40. The April down rather up 35 cents at 145.65 for the day. And the lean hogs in the April contract at $53.90, $1.55 lower. The May futures at $63.85, down $1.62 and a half. Hey, don't forget to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. That's coming up on Tuesday, the 5th day of March, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets available at willag.org. Here's what some of the other marketplaces are trading like at this hour. Nearby crude oil, $55.48 a barrel, $1.77 lower. Ethanol futures at $1.34, they're 0.6 cents lower. That per gallon. Heating oil at $1.97 and 4 cents, down 5 6/10 cents. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.54 and 4 cents, 6 6/10 cents lower. Natural gas, $2.83 and 3 cents. That's 11 7/10 cents higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 26,151, up 149 points. The U.S. dollar at 96.27. That's down 0.97 on the day. The S&P 500 up 12 points at 2803. The gold futures at $1,325.60. Down $3.60. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. It'll be mostly cloudy. We'll have a low tonight of just 18 degrees on a northeast wind at about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny, a high of 37. East winds at 9 to 13, gusting to 16. And Tuesday, mostly cloudy, a low of 28. East winds at 6 to 9. They'll turn to the south-southeast after midnight. That'll bring us mostly cloudy skies and a 41-degree high for Wednesday. South winds at 7 to 11. And they'll turn to the northwest by the afternoon and gust as high as 18 miles an hour. Wednesday evening, cloudy, a low of 22. North-northwest winds at 8 to 10. And northeast after midnight, winds gusting to 16. And Thursday, a 30% chance of snow, mostly cloudy, a high of 33 degrees, northeast winds at 6 miles an hour. The extended forecast into Thursday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 24. Friday, a chance of rain in the afternoon, mostly cloudy and a high of 39 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of rain, snow before 9 p.m., then a chance of snow, cloudy, and a low of 22. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can always hear our weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour. Today, we'll talk with Mark Russo from Chicago. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Be sure to pick up those tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. That's coming up Tuesday next week, not tomorrow, but next week, the 5th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have a dozen grain analysts with us, including, well, of course, always there is Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, thanks so much for being with us. As you know, I'm not in beautiful central Illinois today, but rather in Jupiter, Florida, watching one of the Cardinal games for spring training. I hope things are going well there. I heard you had a lot of wind over the weekend.
Yeah, Monday morning was garbage day, so if guys put their garbage cans out Sunday evening, it was definitely relocated during the evening hours. I know one garbage can down the street had a lid flapping, and I woke up about 10 o'clock and took the duct tape to that neighbor's garbage can, so I don't know if the garbage fell out when they dumped it or not. But yeah, it was kind of brutal. But a lot better than those folks up in Iowa and Minnesota who not only had the wind, but quite a bit of snow, too.
Indeed they did. And in my neighborhood, I had the tree fall off over, or at least the top of it, on Sunday morning. And the neighbors from across the way came over, moved it out of the way, and all was good. So it's good to have great neighbors. Hey, thank you for being with us. I was watching the trade today, and as you and I are talking, we're just closing the marketplace out here around 1:15 Central Time. The markets have been up at least for soybeans 7, 8, 9, 10 cents for the day, but they've fallen back. Can you tell me about what happened?
Well, I think the guilty party or the culprits, the wheat market, the voice of the tomb did have the traditional February 22nd buy. And boy, I don't know if anybody took that voice of the tomb recommendation, but it's been down hard today. The concern is that we're kind of missing out on this world wheat market as these countries continue to buy wheat from other countries. And also, too, we're seeing a situation where some of these forecasts and some of these other countries are in position to have a fairly decent crop coming their way. But spread activity, selling wheat and trying to give the other commodities a little bit of support in the meantime. But that's what we got to do, is see the wheat stabilize, that wheat spread move below a dollar. Ideas are that spread can move into about 80 cents. But soybeans is a little disappointing as a whole. We saw the big announcement Friday, 10 million metric tons possible as we move forward in through here. Also, too, the overall big picture has been echoed as being positive with trade resuming to China. But with the beans' inability to sort of maintain those gains or push up through the recent highs that we've seen here in the last couple months, was just a little bit discouraging as we went into Monday's close here.
Yeah, so what's the problems that we face with wheat going forward the rest of the week? We've dropped off dramatically at this point. Is there that much more downside risk, and is it worse for corn or soybeans? Usually it would be for corn, I think.
Yeah, well, the main risk continues to be in the wheat market as we see liquidation. The commodity fund sold as much as 17,000 contracts as we went into midday there. The thing is wheat goes cheaper, it becomes a feed wheat if it's not high enough for other uses, so therefore it could be a little bit of a competitor to corn. About another 10, 12 cents down in wheat should do it, and hopefully they solve the problems. But the corn and the soybean market, I think, will continue to be range-bound. Even though we stalled out at the upper end of the range, I think we're going to see support on pullbacks in through here as the trade's kind of watching the weather pattern in here. This snow and moisture around, it could be a late start to planting activity, so we'll see how that unfolds. But that's going to be the key in here, kind of acreage mixed, how soon we can tackle some field work and see some additional Chinese bean business comes forward here in the near term or not.
I made note that the Brazilians are about 45% along in their harvest of soybeans at this point. Normally, they'd be 25% along. That has to be supportive for the market, or maybe the beans take a while to get in to the export channels.
Well, we'll watch that weather pattern. There's that BR road down there. I don't know if it's really mudded up enough to get national attention or not, but yeah, you're dead on. 45% complete versus 25% last year and 27% average. So those beans are ready, available on the world market. You know, they made some commitments, and so those commitments are going to be met with those beans coming out first. Where we go from here, if the Asian buyers are looking at an agreement with the U.S., well, they'll hopefully come to the U.S. and pick up some beans that are a little bit cheaper compared to the South American beans. So we'll see how their weather forecast unfolds, see if those beans continue to come out in a timely fashion, and see what direction the bean buyers go. The concern continues to be African swine fever. We're seeing a situation where it's not confined to China. It's moved into Vietnam and some other Asian countries there. So that's a concern because that's going to continue to hamper overall feed demand as those hog herds become infected and liquidated.
Hey, I'm looking forward to having you and Pete Manhart over at the Beef House next week. Can't wait for that to happen.
Oh, boy, that's always a great annual event to attend. Like you've mentioned there, you've got quite a few different analysts on there, and they're all really highly respected, and they all come with some real good marketing and trading ideas, and it's always a good event to attend to gather some knowledge.
Thanks so much.
Very good.
That is Kurt Kimmelees with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You, too, can join us at the Beef House. The cost is just $30. That's next Tuesday. Buy those tickets online at willag.org, willag.org right now, or 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, just one item: trade with China. There will not be an increase on imported Chinese goods starting March 1st. President Trump announced via Twitter last night that the trade negotiations with China had made substantial progress. He's delaying the scheduled March 1 imposition of a 25% tariff on Chinese goods. Teams from the United States and China extended last week's trade talks into the weekend. Now, Friday, the Chinese trade delegation gathered in the Oval Office with President Trump. A letter from President Xi was read out loud. It urged a continued push toward a final trade deal. The only firm detail to come out of the week's worth of trade talks in Washington was a commitment to purchase 10 million metric tons of soybeans. It did not include a timeline for purchases. CNBC reported the Chinese had offered guaranteed purchases of $1.2 trillion of U.S. goods. Again, there was no timeline issued, and this point has not been confirmed by any other outlet, the White House, or the Chinese. During the week, the trade discussions in Washington, D.C. pointed to five MOUs. These memorandums of understanding included one on agriculture and were how U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer had decided to break down the issues in order to tackle them. They were agriculture, non-tariff barriers, services, technology transfer, and intellectual property. President Trump, during the Oval Office meeting Friday, pushed aside the MOUs. He corrected Trade Representative Lighthizer in front of the Chinese. Lighthizer was trying to explain how the MOUs would build the foundation of a trade deal.
An MOU is a contract. It's the way trade agreements are generally used. People refer to it like it's a term sheet. It's not a term sheet. It's an actual contract between the two parties. Yeah. A memorandum of understanding is a binding agreement between two people. Yeah. And that's what we're talking about. It's detailed. It covers everything in great detail. It's just called a memorandum of understanding. It's a legal term. It's a contract.
And would you think that that would be a very long-term deal, sir?
Yes. Contracts last while they last. There's no term. They last while they last.
Mr. President, on North Korea.
By the way, I disagree. I think that a memorandum of understanding is not a contract to the extent that we want. We're doing a memorandum of understanding that will be put into a final contract, I assume. But to me, the final contract is really the thing, Bob, and I think you mean that too, is really the thing that means something. A memorandum of understanding is exactly that. It's a memorandum of what our understanding is. But to me, the contract is the real question is, Bob, so we do a memorandum of understanding, which, frankly, you could do or not do. I don't care if you do it or not. To me, it doesn't mean very much. But if you do a memorandum, how long will it take to put that into a final binding contract?
What? From now on, we're not using the word memorandum of understanding anymore. We're going to use the term trade agreement, all right?
Okay. Right.
No more. We'll never use the term. We'll have the same document. It's going to be called a trade agreement. We're never going to use MOU again.
Are they going to put that into another agreement?
What we'll have will be a trade agreement. That if we cross, we have major hurdles. I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse. Assuming you decide on an agreement, it'll be signed by the two people. It'll be a trade agreement between the United States and China. We're not going to use it.
I like that much better. I like that term much better.
With that.
I wouldn't go into a memorandum. I would go right into a trade agreement. Either you're going to make a deal or you're not. To have these other agreements doesn't mean anything because they're not that meaningful, in my opinion.
Now, the important part in this exchange is likely not the MOU discussion. The president corrected his lead trade negotiator in front of the Chinese delegation. Clearly, if a trade deal is to be struck, it can only be done one-on-one between Presidents Trump and Xi. Mr. Trump tweeted last night, if additional progress is made, a meeting would be scheduled in Mar-a-Lago. Again, no timeline was included. The president has long focused on closing the trade gap with China. The other issues have not been of very much importance to him, although he does mention Chinese stealing and intellectual property rights. A trade deal with China is one of the president's campaign promises. The offer to purchase $1.2 trillion, CNBC reported last week, might be very enticing to the president as a way to close the trade gap and fulfill a campaign promise. If it is completed in this fashion, without enforcement mechanisms or real intellectual property rights protection, then, as President Trump has said recently, Democrats will not go along with the deal. Republicans are likely to stay mum as the deal sits idle in Congress and simply becomes a presidential election year rallying cry. Presidents, of course, negotiate trade deals. Congress approves them on a simple up or down majority vote. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnittke has taken a look at crop budgets for the coming year and updated some of those numbers from last fall to now. And he says it didn't change a lot. However, what you have heard about the acreage mix in the U.S. may not be exactly what the crop budgets are saying in Illinois and even across the Midwest. I asked him what he found.
So in 2019, we're looking at corn versus soybean returns. What we find is that corn is projected to be more profitable than soybeans first year in a while. However, our budgets wouldn't say we should be shifting to more corn. In particular, corn after corn is less profitable than soybeans. So it's sort of a status quo for the central Illinois area. 50-50 corn-soybean rotation seems to be the more profitable for 2019.
Does it vary by region in the state very much?
So if you're looking at it, central Illinois would be the place where you would expect corn to be more profitable than soybeans, and the other areas are still going to favor 50-50 corn-soybean rotations. In essence, our budgets do not say, even though we have had a shift down in soybean prices to move to more corn. So corn-soybean rotation 50-50 in northern and central part of the state still seems good. Heavier soybeans in southern Illinois likely will be more profitable.
That sounds like a normal prospect for the coming year.
That sounds like a normal prospect for the coming year, absolutely. It is different than previous years where we were looking at soybeans being more profitable than corn. However, the big thing right now is coming up to planting intentions report and whether we will see the shifts from soybeans to corn that some people are expecting to see. These budgets would say, at least in the heart of the Corn Belt, or even in the Corn Belt in general, that you won't see shifts from soybeans to corn. So you got to see those shifts from someplace else, and there's limited opportunities there.
That prospective plantings report is due out from the United States Department of Agriculture on the 29th, I believe, of March, at the end of the March, and it will be a survey of producers. However, at their Ag Outlook Forum in the month of February, they did give us some numbers, and they dropped the soybean acreage to 85 million acres. That's down from 89.2 last year. Increased corn acres to about 92, and I think that number was 89.1 last year, if I remember right, around the nation. So they're expecting a pretty good shift towards corn.
And I would question whether that is going to happen. Again, if you're looking at the heart of the Corn Belt, you don't see the economics saying switch to corn. We didn't see higher winter wheat planting, so what you're left with is from an economic standpoint, cotton taking soybeans away, and that probably could happen. Is that 1 million acres or so? And then North Dakota and South Dakota and Great Plains and spring wheat. And I don't do those economics, but it's still hard for me to believe there's going to be a very large shift to match those numbers in that report.
What changed in your crop budgets from last fall to this spring?
From 2018, the two major changes. One is this: as you would expect, soybean prices are down. Last year we were using 980 for our price. Now we used 850, but fall bids are at 9. Either case, you're looking at lower soybean prices. The other thing, though, that's happened is a higher cost, and in particular, the one that matters for corn, soybeans, is higher nitrogen cost.
Then you updated your budget since last fall with that number.
Yep, and we're putting in there. So last fall, anhydrous ammonia prices were $500 per ton, more or less, and now you're looking something in the $600 to $625 per ton for anhydrous ammonia. If you're putting 220 pounds of anhydrous ammonia on, that's $11 an acre. So you got the soybean prices coming down, which would favor soybeans. You got fertilizer prices going up, which would favor corn. The fertilizer price counters the soybean price to a little bit. You know, $45 is what I would calculate in central Illinois being the price decline taking away from soybeans. $11 on fertilizer cost increase. So soybean profitability relative to corn increased, corn increased relative to soybeans by about $30. That puts it more profitable than soybeans last year, but still not indicating shifts.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You can read his thoughts on the Farm Doc Daily website each and every Tuesday. The address there is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. One more address for you to go to. That's willag.org. There you'll find the All-Day Ag Outlook and a way to buy your tickets. That's next week on Tuesday, not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. And if you've not bought your ticket yet, go ahead and buy it right now today. It's just $30, and for that, you'll find a dozen grain analysts on hand with us, along with Eric Snodgrass to take a look at the weather and Murray Wise to talk about agricultural farmland and the value it may or may not hold over time. And you'll also get the Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and a Beef House noon hour meal. What more could you ask for? It's just $30. Join me over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We open our doors at 8 a.m. Central, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone on Tuesday, March the 5th. The cost is just $30. You can buy those tickets online at willag.org or by calling 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065.
It's St. Walburga Day. The nun was an English missionary to the Frankish Empire. She died on this date in 779 and was canonized on May 1st of 870. She is known as the patron of crops. It's also International Clam Chowder Festival Day and National Chocolate-Covered Peanuts Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1904, Adele Davis was born. She was a nutritionist and author of Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit. The book created a firestorm in the medical community, where doctors found on average one mistake per page. in 1918 on this date. Wartime food rationing began in parts of England. The rationing was in response to German U-boats that were sinking imports of food. By the time rationing began, parts of England had just 6 weeks of food on hand. In 1922, Donald MacLean was born. MacLean was a Scottish potato expert who had one of the world's largest private collections of potatoes with 367 varieties. The potato revolution was credited to MacLean. He spent his life making the public aware of the innate diversity of potatoes, including cooking quality, pest and disease resistance, flavor, and appearance. And in 1934, Elizabeth Gertrude Knight Britton died. An American botanist, she helped establish the New York Botanical Gardens. Britton published more than 350 papers, including more than 170 on mosses. And that's this date in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey. With 150 years of agribusiness expertise, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Mark, thanks so much. It's lovely weather here in Florida at the Cardinal game. However, I don't think it's quite as nice where you are. Tell me about the Midwest.
Yeah, Todd. Well, this weekend, quite a wild weekend across the Midwest as we had a storm system intensify, tracking from the plains up into the Midwest and Great Lakes. Basically, blizzard conditions from western Kansas all the way up through northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, northwest Wisconsin, and then just extremely windy and stormy. It was actually thunderstorms making it as far north as northern Illinois here this past Saturday. Highly anomalous winter storm. And that's ushered in now cold. In fact, as we look out for the remainder of this week, we're seeing another round of unseasonably cold temperatures, not only across the Midwest, but across much of the northern U.S. And that actually extends southward so that for next week, the colder than normal temperatures engulf much of the central and eastern U.S. So this very still kind of true wintry pattern that we've been in here in the Midwest, let alone much of the central U.S. in recent weeks, it's going to continue as we go into the first few weeks of March. So certainly March is coming in like a lion and an angry one at that as well.
Indeed. Hopefully it'll go out a little softer, more like a lamb. Turn your attention to South America. Things have gotten a whole lot better there since they were starting in the early season.
Yeah, as we saw the dryness basically get alleviated as we went through February, and now going into March, the pattern looks to feature generally seasonal rainfall totals or near normal temperatures and rainfall totals across the vast majority of South America's summer crop acreage. So that includes Brazil, that includes Argentina, so still beneficial for late development of corn and soybeans and cotton across South America. For the new winter corn crop that's being planted in Brazil following harvesting of soybeans, things are starting along also pretty well due to the generally seasonal rainfall totals in the main winter corn area. So it's kind of been done as done for the dryness standpoint back in late December and January. But now as we approach the harvest and the new winter corn growing season here and starting things out, things are starting out in pretty good shape.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do pick up those tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It's next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for $30. A dozen analysts, and we'll take up so much more all day long. You need to be there. That $30 includes a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning, your Beef House meal at the noon hour. You can't buy that anywhere else. And for
so little money. Plus that dozen grain analysts. It's a great day. If you've never been before, this is our 29th annual meeting. It's been around for 29 years. You know it has to be good. We sure hope you join us at 800-898-1065 or willag.org to buy the tickets. I'm Todd Gleason.